Welcome to Teaching Restored, where we get to talk about how to teach the restored gospel of Jesus Christ in all its forms, in all ways, which is a lot of teaching. We can teach a lot.
Yes.
That's what we're going to talk about today. In many different ways.
I had a feeling.
In many different ways.
Did you? You were going to say that. I was like, this is a weird way to start this. Why is he saying it like this?
Yes. Well, I think it'll be obvious once we start getting going. But let's get going anyways.
Okay.
Question for you, Julie.
I'm ready.
What teaching... No, what callings in the church are obviously not teaching callings?
Oh, that's actually a much harder question than I would have expected it to be. Are obviously a janitor. Oh, that's not a calling in the church anymore.
But there is one related to that.
Facilities manager?
Okay. A facilities manager.
Or the calendar, the person who does the calendar?
Like, good. I'm writing these down. Calendar.
No, that's not true. I was going to say the Sunday school president isn't typically a teacher, but he fills in and he runs councils.
Great.
What about, what about like a secretary, like the elders quorum secretary? What do you think?
Good.
Do they ever teach? Okay. Something like that.
Not necessarily. I mean, that's not in their real job description, no.
Right. Job description. I'm trying to think. I feel like almost every calling in the church at some point, even if it's like teaching an individual, when you're counseling, you're teaching. And so if you're part of any kind of a council as part of your job, can you think of a bunch?
I thought of a few, but I've had more time to think about this.
Yeah, than it's you true. Have, right? It's true. You have.
So building cleaner scheduler and building scheduler, we've hit those.
Yeah.
Right.
Uh-huh.
A seminary principal?
Yes, but don't they have to fill in if one of the teachers doesn't show?
Do they?
I don't know. I'm asking.
Or maybe
there's a question mark.
I don't know. I don't know. I would think that that's the kind of the natural, if someone doesn't show and there's no notice and they would automatically fill in, right?
The principal would, just because he's there.
Right. Okay. But let's say not. That's not in his job description, maybe typically,
sure. But maybe not. Yeah.
Librarian.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Right. Do you want some chalk? Here's some chalk. Sign it out. Yeah.
I'll make your copy.
What about the technology specialists?
You know what? They are a teacher because they have to teach us how to do stuff sometimes. Oh, you're having difficulty with the steak Wi-Fi? Here you go.
Okay. All right.
Let me teach you.
Okay.
Scratch it off your list, Kevin. Anybody who knows anything about technology is a teacher because they are helpful.
Huh. That's interesting that you would say it like that.
Yeah.
But we'll get back to that. We'll get back to that.
Oh, did I just set you up for something?
No, you set you up. You set you up.
Darn it.
Darn. Yeah. You just fell into my trap. It depends. So there are other ones that may not be seen as a teaching calling, like employment specialist.
Yeah.
Right.
But
I mean, exactly.
So you said, what are some of them that are clearly not teaching?
Right.
And I would say that the employment specialist is maybe still helping.
Sure. Like, so that could be some teaching.
Way.
Right.
Yeah.
So I get it. But we normally don't think of, that is a teacher. That is, right?
Right. Totally.
Okay. And another one is like emergency prep or emergency communication. It's not like they have a class. For example, emergency communication in our ward is awesome. We have a net check every week and on ham radios and on WhatsApp and on radios like that, you know, like the the 2 mile
like walkie-talkie?
GMR radios, whatever those are. And in, within neighborhoods, not where we're out, wow, where we live, but yeah. And we check in all week, every Sunday. And
wow,
it's pretty cool. And someone leads that, but that's not really a teaching
calling. They're not in a teaching calling. I can see that. Right.
But going back to what you were saying, I got to tell you an example of someone that had a calling that didn't, obviously was not a teaching calling. His name is Larry Waters. Larry Waters, back in Beaverton, he was the facilities manager or whatever. I don't know the exact calling, but he scheduled building cleaning. And this was years ago. And normally building cleaning, hey, can you clean the building? Can you be there this Saturday at 9 o'clock and we'll clean the building with you? Yeah, good. And texting a whole bunch of people and coordinating it all and getting it all together. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a very administrative calling to make sure that the church is clean, that the people have the keys to get in, that it's checked afterwards to make sure that it actually got done, or some return a report saying, yes, we got it done, or, you know, there's, and then scheduling people and people saying, I can't be there this Saturday. And, okay, well, can you come in later on, or can you do a different one? Can you switch something? I mean, there's all these different things of administration that they have to take care of. Larry turned his calling into a spiritual thing. It was awesome. This was years ago and I still remember this. It was awesome. We had a bunch of little kids and we're going to go to the church, which coincidentally, I mean, we weren't in Utah. We were in Oregon and it was a block away, oddly enough. So yeah, we walked over to the church, but the way he set it up, it was an experience. It was a spiritual experience to clean the church.
What?
I know. So first off, was his invitation. Man. It wasn't just, hey, would you please come to the church and clean it on this day? Yeah, okay, we'll do it. We'll be there. Right? Yeah. It was, hey, we want you to realize that we can't do this without you. What you're doing is actually really important, and here's why it's important. And you're in the church where people feel the Spirit, where we worship our Father in heaven and Jesus Christ. So while you're there, talk with your kids about this. Tell them what they're doing, why they're doing it, and here's maybe some scriptures to read, or you know, whatever. I mean, and it was an experience. He created a spiritual experience for us to go clean the church. Awesome.
Wow. Like, even by suggesting the conversations that you could have while you're there and hear a few scripture references. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
It was. And so I don't remember what I was reading this week, but something prompted me to think of every calling that we have. And I really don't care. I mean, building scheduler, you know, I haven't seen a building scheduler calling be spiritual at all. But I have seen another one, seminary principal. Let me give you another example of seminary principal, right? Seminary principal, make sure that they come in, that they're not running around or whatever, that people come in and they open up the building. And this is for early morning seminary, for those of you who have release time, right? This is a little different than maybe a principal for release time, but for early morning, get there early, open up the doors. Right? Yeah. Welcome people in, whatever they come in. So we have in our building, Mike Nelson. I love Mike.
Oh yeah.
Mike comes up. He's so faithful. He opens up the building. He comes in and he sits on the couch. He pulls out his guitar and he just plays as the kids come in and welcomes everyone as he plays and sings. And he creates this atmosphere as they come in and they expect it. And I think if I remember correctly, he even sets up a hot chocolate station for them.
No way.
It's, and it's wild.
I'm magnifying your calling at its finest.
No kidding. But he is creating experiences for these kids to set the tone for the teaching that they're about to receive in seminary, and does such a fabulous job. In technology, in our stake, they have these stake youth technology specialists. It isn't just a whole bunch of old tech guys doing it, right? They've called a number of youth to be on the stake technology team, group, whatever it's called. And they're being taught and how to, I mean, for example, if you're going and they help run state conference, the broadcast of state conference, right? And the projection and the video and all that. It's not just, oh, technically this is what you do. Of course it is that, and it has to be that, right? But if you think about it, when you're teaching technology, why do you have the technology? What are you focused on? And then you have to go through what experiences people having with the technology or the outcomes of the technology that you're having. And it's what do they hear? What do they see? Do those things draw them closer to Christ in the way that you're showing it? And so they have to have their spiritual hat on as they do this technological thing, right? If you look at General Conference, they do it in a very specific way. I know this may sound weird, but as they zoom in slowly to people who are talking, or the Tabernacle Choir, they kind of pan across, right? And then they'll come up close on someone. Yeah. And then what type of people are they coming up close? It's not just the same type of person. It's varied all over the place, right? And so they're doing this. Those are all subtle things, but they make a difference.
Right.
We had an emergency communications specialist in our ward, Don Greer. I loved Don. I love Don Greer. He's no longer with us, but I love Don Greer. And he made this a spiritual thing of, hey, we need to contact each other. What happens if not? How can we help each other? What can we do? All right, this is how you're going to get set up and how we're going to support each other and how we're going to love each other. And what happens if, and he set this whole emergency preparedness communication thing up in our ward. And it's ever since then, it's gone and it has continued on and on because of the foundational work that he provided, being on more spiritual basis than anything else. It wasn't just a technically, this is how you do it. Again, although he did that.
You have to do that as part of it. Yeah.
He set up my ham radio stuff, my antenna on the top of my house, and encouraged me to get my license and then how to use it and why, and having people take on certain responsibilities in this whole thing. And it was a great teaching moment for me. And I really loved it. And now the reason I bring this up is because, I remember what prompted this whole thing. Duh. Let me bring, where is it? All right, here. I'm going to bring up an email that came to us from a listener. Why am I not finding it? Okay, here we go. I found it.
Oh, I was going to say, I think I might know which one you're talking about because I am putting the pieces together in my brain.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So let me pull this apart here. This person said, I am a temple and family history consultant. And she says, by the way, I've never heard you mention this calling when you talk about different kinds of teaching in the church. Hint, hint. And I'm like, good thought. Yes, of course. Right. Duh, right?
That is not one that would fall into one of the categories.
Exactly.
Not being a teacher. Like, that's a big teaching calling.
It is a big teaching calling, but Listen to what she says. She says, this is a new calling for me. And at first it was very overwhelming, but the Spirit began teaching me that this calling is all about teaching and ministering to the one, which I have done in other callings. I'm learning how to transfer some of my experience from past callings. Family history is an area where you can easily forget to stay centered on Jesus Christ. There are certain skills and knowledge that people need to gain. How to find things on how to do things on Family Search, how ordinances ready works, printing out names, finding people to add to the tree, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes we can't see the Savior for the trees. The last training from general authorities given this past March was all about putting the Savior first and letting our love for him and his love for us motivate everything we do in temple and family history work. She said, I love that idea and have been looking for ways to make sure I'm doing that. And she said, today's podcast gave me some excellent methods to try. And then she she created actually a going off of your personal mission statement from a few episodes ago. She lists out her personal mission statement for this as well. And it's all centered on creating experiences, helping draw people closer to Christ, right? But in something like that, it is very logistical again. It's very administrative. I'm going to teach like someone how to find names.
Totally. Well, and you can lose Christ for the trees.
Absolutely.
Like you can get so distracted in the administration that you lose sight of what it's actually all about.
And so can someone in scheduling a building, in technology, in all these things, right? Why are we doing this? And how do we bring Christ into those types of callings? And how could we turn those into teaching callings? That is not, I don't think that's something that we typically are thinking about when we receive a calling such as that. The seminary principal who welcomes kids in, they're not thinking typically, not thinking, how do I make this a good experience for them and help bring in the Spirit from the very beginning, right? It's, hey, welcome.
Right.
Making sure you guys aren't being rascals.
Yep. And open the building and da, 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 the administrative things are.
What get the hot chocolate ready. Yep.
Make sure your guitar's in tune.
So yeah, that's an important one too. Yes,
it is. I totally agree. I meant it when I said it. It wasn't sarcasm.
Okay, good. Thank you. Because that would distract, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Big time.
Off the top of your head, what are some of the things that we can do kind of generically if we feel that we have a non-teaching calling, that it's all administrative? What can we do to help to teach in some way and help bring others to Christ through our calling? Anything come to your mind, jump to your mind.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you what jumped to my mind first. I just got asked to be the primary pianist. And I'm like, oh, okay. I love teaching.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So, huh, okay, so good.
That might be one of those callings that falls under that category.
Yeah.
So even as you were saying this, I thought in my mind, I'm like, how can I do just that through music, by sitting behind the piano?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? How can I do that? And so I started thinking about what you were talking about with Mike Nelson. And I was like, well, think about how his prelude impacted the mood. So I can make sure that I get there early so that I'm playing prelude, because it definitely, especially with kids who aren't even as conscious of it, it can help to affect kind of the reverence in that space. So anyway, I started to think a little bit about some of the things that I could do that are like logistical, but it's what you said, the administrative things have to be done because if they're not, they will interfere with people's ability to feel the Spirit and come closer to Christ.
Yes.
Right. Yes. And so like in this case, I feel like there is a lot that music can do to help people feel the Spirit, including the itty bitties, like the messages that are being taught through these songs. And so I feel like it's such an important calling, but it's not a teaching calling. And if I can do what this sweet sister did when she was talking about her calling and how she views it with temple and family history, and I can be conscious of how can I not get in the way of what, you know, how can I don't want to just look at the forest, which is, oh man, the rowdy kids, and I got to get there on time, and I got to get my kid dropped off before I da 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 da, and then I got to make sure I know the songs, and I go and just really focus on, you know, making sure that I'm trying to feel the spirit myself and help invite that through the music. So one example, sorry, that was very like autobiographical, but I was kind of thinking about it.
It's a great example. Let me give you an example that's actually really close to that. My oldest son, Bryson, years ago, made an arrangement of a song. I don't remember what song it was.
Bryson's told me a story. I know the story.
Okay, good, good, good. So we, he wanted to record it. So we went to the church and I set up some microphones and some recording equipment and all right, good. We're going to record this. And he played it and we recorded it. And I said, okay, that was good. But it wasn't great. It was good, but wasn't great. So I said, all right, Bryson, what I want you to do is I want you to pretend that your mom is dying. And one of the last things she wants is for you to play the song for her. Now play it. Completely different song. He played it with so much feeling, etc. Right? Yeah. And when you talk about piano, maybe something that piano players may be able to do instead of just playing music, but play it with their testimony. Right.
Yeah, I'm
gonna, and it will feel different to the people who listen. It's not just, oh, they're playing the piano, right? Playing it and just thinking about that, right? And I'm assuming I'm not as good of a piano player as would be called to a piano calling. So I don't know if a lot of piano players do that, but that's just one small example. Whether it's piano playing or doing any of these other callings that we said, the focus though, as they're doing it, is on Christ. And because the focus is on Christ while they do it completely differently and they do it with more heart and it can be seen and it can be felt.
Yeah.
So whatever it is, maybe that, and I don't have the answer for this, but maybe one of the answers could be that as we do it, as we are the librarian, which there aren't many libraries anymore, but can we, can we, when we do it, we're thinking about Christ at the same time and doing it differently. I don't know if that makes sense.
Okay, so it does, and it also sounds a little bit kind of cheesy when you say
it. It does. That's why I'm thinking, that's a little weird.
So let me see if I can uncheese it just a little bit, just because I'm like, with the cheese. That's good. My personal thing. Come on, uncheese it. So two things you said. What we think about unconsciously influences our behavior. If we are thinking about the administrative things, then we will come across as administrative in the way that we do it. Mm. Like it will be a logistic.
Yes.
Somebody's asking you to sign up to clean the building. And they're like, please, everybody needs to take a turn. Come on, just sign up. Like it's an obligation, blah, 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 versus, hey, thank you for your contribution. Like your friend, right? And this is so important. And here's some things that you can do and it's going to be amazing. And you can have these conversations with your kids and da, da, da. So different. And so if what you think about unconsciously influences your behavior and you are focused on the administrative part of your calling, then that will come across to the people that you're serving versus if you are truly focused on Jesus Christ and magnifying, lifting where you stand, so to speak, then that will be sensed as well. And, you know, I think about the piano. I have been in callings before where I'm like reading the words as I play the song. And I'm thinking them in my mind. And then I can ad lib and add to it and try and create more from the music. And the kids feel it and they sing differently. So that's an obvious way. And I think about this woman in our ward who's doing this backpack program, which feels like a thankless job. Hardly anybody participates in. We've been doing it for a super long time. And she, every month, comes up with different creative ways to remind us that we are invited to participate in this. And every time I'm just like, man, this is so awesome. Like she is magnifying her calling, lifting where she stands, even if people don't respond as well, right? And I'm like, you can tell she's doing it for the right reasons versus just like going through the logistics and the administrative parts and the motions. And so do we need to just, you know, think about Jesus all the time? I hear what you're saying, but it can become a super cliche phrase. Yep. But like, we do, we got to be thinking about what's the point? What is my role as an instrument in God's hands in this calling? How does he want me to do it? Like, I am literally putting myself in a position to do his work. And so what does that look like? How would he do it?
Right.
Kind of a thing.
When maybe Larry was, when Larry was doing the building cleaning scheduling, and he did that, and he did it the way he did, if nothing else, was he a teacher? I mean, on paper, the answer is no. But was he a teacher? Yes.
No, he was.
Right? He was. He was. He taught us all. And I think the thing that he taught me the most was that I can take a calling that, or an activity or a or responsibility that may not seem like it has anything to do with Jesus, and turn it into something that really focuses on him. And that was a huge teaching moment for me, just from his example. And going back to the example that you gave as well, I mean, it can be just an example of how do you do the backpack program, right? Wow. They are really magnifying their calling and doing a great job. If the only teaching that comes out of that is, look at that. She's in it. Even though it's kind of, like you said, a thankless job. I need to be more like that maybe. Maybe I need to focus and be more like her, right? That's the best, one of the best teachings you can give right there.
Totally. Like, what is your example? What are you showing through your attitude as you do participate in this calling? Like, it's, I think that the greatest teachers are those that teach by example.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that stupid adage, it's just stupid. Let's just acknowledge how stupid it is that where it's like people who do something, people who can't do teach or whatever that dumb, do you know what I'm talking about? That quote?
Oh no. Yeah, I do. I do. I have heard that before. Yes.
What is it? People who can't do teach. I'm like, what the what? How about if we do both? Like do and through your doing, you teach. Mm-hmm. Man, that makes me so mad. I'm typing in ChatGPT. People who can't do teach. Okay, what is it? I'm going to find it right now because it's bugging me. The phrase, those who can't do, teach, is a well-known saying, often used sarcastically or critically to suggest that people who are not successful at a skill or profession end up teaching it instead. It's rude. He says, in reality, many of the best teachers are those who have done and those who choose to teach, sharing their expertise and passion. Teaching well requires a deep understanding, clear communication, empathy, and often a stronger mastery of the subject than just doing it. Thank you, ChatGPT.
Thank you.
You are teaching. Oh, sorry, ChatGPT. You are teaching by doing.
That's right. So let's go teach by doing. Let's take any, and it's not just callings, it's responsibilities as well, right? Yeah. In my calling, I may have some very, very, and I do have some very administrative things that I need to get done. I need to remember in those moments, what am I teaching? That it's not just administrative, but that there are teaching elements to that, that I have the people around me. There was a time recently where I went to go visit someone and get to know them because I didn't really know them well. And I can, you know, we talked about life and what his life was like, what my life is like, and back and forth, and had a great, good conversation. And it was about time to be done. And then he said something, and I was like, hey, do you want to come ministering with me? And he said, yeah, okay. I don't know that he's ever done that before. And yeah. we went and it was an incredible. So here I am. I'm just going and doing my things. I'm going to go minister to people. I'm going to talk to them. But then to take someone along, I thought, you know, that is, I had, okay. That's, and I thought about it later. And I now call it snowball ministering, where I go to someone and say, great, will you come with me? And then we go to the next one and say, great, will you come with me? And we kind of snowball it around, right? But I mean, that could have been more, I need to go there, need to be good with them and get to know them. But logistically next, I need to go, well, let's add an element of teaching and let's add the person in there. And really focusing on the people. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's focus on what it's all about. That's so cool. Like, and it also makes the person feel like you were not just a box to be checked.
Right.
You were a person. And now like, hey, I want you. Come with me. Like, I want more time with you. I want you to come with me. Like, I'm inviting you into this.
And like Larry, who scheduled building cleaning, we didn't feel like we were a box to be checked off his list. Like it was like, oh, I got that taken care of. Okay, done. No, we were part of the whole thing. So that's great.
That's really cool. All about the focus.
It is. It is. So go take those responsibilities that you have. Take those callings that you have that may not sound like a great teaching opportunity. Turn them into a teaching opportunity because they really may be. So there's my thought for today.
I love
if you would, please share, like, invite, and watch out closely. Very, very, very soon, we're going to add some more things to Teaching Restored, and we're very excited about it. So keep watch.
Yes, we are.
All right. Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you next time. Bye.